The U.S.-Iran situation is rapidly becoming one of the most consequential foreign policy puzzles of the summer. The ink on the nuclear deal is barely dry. It was signed just days ago in Swiss-mediated talks, and the two sides are already in direct public contradiction about what was agreed. Trump insists Iran committed to indefinite nuclear inspections. Iran's government is saying not only did they not agree to that, but that their nuclear program wasn't even on the table during those talks. These are not minor discrepancies in interpretation. These are flatly incompatible accounts of the same negotiation.
The Senate added another layer Tuesday by passing a war powers resolution that amounts to a formal rebuke of the administration's Iran policy. That's a significant bipartisan statement. It doesn't have the force to halt action directly. Trump would veto it. But it signals that Congress is increasingly uncomfortable with what it sees as executive unilateralism on military decisions related to Iran, particularly after the F-15E was shot down in April.
That pilot's account, which emerged this week, is worth dwelling on. He described Iranian drones approaching in what he called a jellyfish formation, coordinated swarms that moved as a single unit rather than as individual aircraft. That's not improvised technology. That's a sophisticated, pre-planned tactics doctrine built around swarm coordination that exploits the decision-making latency of traditional air defense systems. U.S. intelligence officials are reportedly alarmed not just by the capability, but by the implication that Iran has been developing and drilling these tactics for an extended period without detection.
Which connects directly to the Strait of Hormuz situation, because even though Hormuz technically reopened, the disruption is far from over. Phillips 66's CEO said publicly that up to 100 million barrels of oil remain trapped near the strait, tankers that simply can't move. And a separate but related problem has emerged. Barnacles. Hundreds of tankers that sat stationary for weeks during the Hormuz closure have accumulated enough barnacle growth on their hulls to dramatically reduce their operational speed and fuel efficiency, stranding them effectively even as the strait opens. That's not a story you typically read in geopolitics coverage, but it's affecting real oil supply chains right now.
North Korea used this moment to make a conspicuous show of naval force. Kim Jong-un personally commissioned the Choi-hyon on Tuesday, a 5,000-ton destroyer that is North Korea's largest surface warship ever, and announced plans to build 10,000-ton warships as part of what he's calling a nuclear-armed navy. The commissioning came after 14 months of sea trials. 14 months is fast by conventional naval construction standards, which suggests significant outside assistance, almost certainly from Russia, given the deepening defense cooperation we've seen over the past 2 years.
Kim's timing here is deliberate. He's watching the Iran situation, watching the U.S. attention fragmented across multiple crises, and he's choosing this moment to demonstrate military credibility. A nuclear navy changes the deterrence calculus in Northeast Asia in ways that South Korea and Japan are already responding to. This is not a symbolic gesture. It's a structural shift in regional military balance that deserves more attention than it's getting.
And layered over all of this is the Hormuz barnacle problem and oil supply chains, which brings us to the economic dimension. Bessent's transient inflation framing at the Economic Club of New York sounds familiar. It's the same word the Fed used in 2021 before inflation ran to 9%. The Fed has now turned hawkish in its projections, meaning the central bank and the Treasury Secretary are publicly disagreeing about where prices are going. That's not normal. And markets are pricing in that uncertainty.